Chapter number 67, Public Debt. Page number 821. Public debt refers to borrowing by a government from within the country or from abroad, from private individuals or association of individuals, or from banking and non-banking financial institutions. Classification of public debt. Public debt may be classified as under 1. Internal and external. Internal debt is raised within the country, and external debt is owed to foreigners or foreign governments or institutions. 2. Productive and unproductive. The productive debt is expected to create assets which will yield income sufficient to pay the principal and interest on the loan. In other words, they are expected to pay their way. They are self-liquidating. On the other hand, loans raised for war do not create any asset. They are a dead weight and are regarded as unproductive. 3. Short-term and long-term. Short-term loans are repayable after short interval of time. Example, treasury bills payable after 3 months, ways and means advances from the central bank. They are intended to bridge the gap temporarily between current revenue and current expenditure. It is called floating debt. Long-term loans are payable after a long time covering several years. They are also called funded debt. Growth of public debt. Borrowing by public authority is a modern practice. In the past, whenever there was an emergency, usually a war, the monarch relied on the hoarded wealth or borrowed on his own personal credit. Books on history abound in instances of fabulous hoards and accounts of loots and sacks of hoarded wealth either from the king's treasuries or from temples and churches. But this method of finance is not suited to modern conditions. It will be inadequate and uneconomical. The system of public credit, making it easy for the state to borrow, has led to tremendous increase in the indebtedness of modern states. Page number 822. The public debt of 27 countries in 1900 was £6,079,000,000. In 1913, it increased to £8,566,000,000, and in 1933 to £22,000,000,000. Almost the sole responsibility for this phenomenal increase lies on war. The net cost of the war of 1914 to 1918 was estimated at £42 billion. The war of 1939 to 1945 was innately more costly. Causes of increase in public debt. Besides war, there are several other causes which have brought about great increase in the size of public debt. 1. The most important cause of increase in public debt is war or war preparedness. Nations attach a great importance to their territorial integrity, and they consider no sacrifice too much to defend their country. Every war, therefore, leaves the country under greater debt. 2. The increase is also due to fairly frequent budget deficits on current account. The deficits arise from the necessity of maintaining full economic activity in the economies which may have caused to expand. 3. Increase in public debt is also due to the undertaking of welfare schemes by governments in modern times. 4. In public utilities, where there is no convenient profit check, no tight control over costs can be maintained, and there are more losses than gains. They also add to the weight of public debt. 5. In recent years, the urge for economic growth has induced the underdeveloped countries to contract debts both internally and externally. The volume of public debt has consequently swollen. The following are the principal purposes for raising public loans. 1. Bridging the gap between revenue and expenditure. It often happens that towards the end of the financial year, government experiences shortage of funds. To cover this gap between revenue and expenditure, the government raises temporary loans or gets ways and means advance from the central bank. In India, the government issues what are called treasury bills, which are repayable after 3 months. 2. Financing public works program. During depression, the government has to launch public works program to provide employment. In this way, money is injected into the economy. To lift the depression. For this purpose, it becomes necessary to raise public loans to ensure economic stability. 3. Curbing inflation. When inflation is rampant and it is desired to bring down the prices, the government issues public loans. In this way, money or purchasing power is drawn from the public. Reduction in money supply will bring down prices. 4. Financing economic development. The underdeveloped countries are now very keen on speedy economic development, which involves huge investment. They are unable to raise adequate finances through taxation. Hence, resort to public borrowing becomes necessary. 5. Financing the public sector. An economic system which is becoming increasingly popular is that of mixed economy. For several reasons, economic, political and social, there has to be a rapidly expanding public sector. The financing of this sector is not possible without resorting to public borrowing. 6. War finance. A modern war is a very costly affair. To prosecute a modern war by taxation is simply out of the question. Public borrowing becomes essential. Thus, public borrowing is necessitated by the requirements of filling the gap between revenue and expenditure, public program, economic development and war finance. Methods of debt redemption. Modern governments make it a point of honor to repay their debts. Debt repayment maintains and strengthens the national credit. If a national emergency arises later, it will be easy to raise funds. Repayment of loans also releases funds for trade and industry. The following are some of the methods adopted. 1. Utilization of surplus revenue. This is an old method and badly out of tune with the modern conditions. Budget surplus is not a common phenomenon. Even when there is a surplus, it is insignificant that it cannot be used for making any substantial reduction in the public debt. 2. Purchase of government bonds. The government may buy its own stock in the market, thus wiping off its obligation to that extent. This may be done by the application of surplus revenues or by borrowing at low rates, if the conditions are favorable. 3. Terminable annuities. When it is intended completely to wipe off a permanent debt, it may be arranged to pay the creditors a certain fixed amount for a number of years. These annual payments are called annuities. It will appear that during the time these annuities are being paid, there will be much greater strain on the government finances than when only interest has to be paid. 4. Conversion. This is a method for reducing the burden of the debt. A government may have borrowed when the rate of interest was high. Page number 823. Now, if the rate of interest falls, it can convert a high-rated loan into a low-rated one. The government gives notice to the creditors that they should either agree to reduce the interest rate for future payments or it will exercise the option of repaying the loan. In case the bondholders do not accept the lower rate, then the government will raise a new loan at lower rate of interest and with the proceeds pay off the old debt. The effect is to convert a high-rated loan into a low-rated one. The financial burden is consequently reduced. 5. Sinking fund. This is the most important method. A fund is created for the repayment of every loan by setting aside a certain amount every year out of the current revenue. The sum to be set aside is so calculated that over a certain period, the total sum accumulated, together with the interest thereon, is enough to pay off the loan. Some revolutionary proposals. Apart from the above methods of repayment of debts normally adopted by modern governments, sometimes unorthodox and revolutionary proposals are also made from time to time for wiping off or reducing public debt. Example, debt repudiation, compulsory scaling down of capital, and or interest and capital levy. These methods are not considered honorable, and no responsible government entertains such proposals. Hence, they need not detain us. Burden of public debt. In order to assess the burden of public debt, we shall have to consider the nature and the purpose of the public debt. If the debt is taken for productive purposes, example for irrigation and railways, it will not mean any burden. On the other hand, it will confer a benefit provided the scheme has been successfully executed. But if the debt is unproductive, it will impose both money burden and real burden on the community. The measure of the burden will depend on whether the debt is internal or external. Burden of internal debt. Internal debt involves a series of transfers of wealth within the community. For example, when the loan is raised, money is transferred from the lenders to the government. The government then makes payments to contractors, government servants, or to those people from whom it buys goods and services. Money is thus transferred from some sections of the community to the other sections. In this case, there is obviously no direct money burden of the debt on the community as a whole. But there will be a direct real burden, that is, sacrifice, hardship or loss of economic welfare on the community depending on the nature of these transfers of wealth. If by these transfers wealth comes to be more evenly distributed, that is, wealth is transferred from the rich to the poor, then public debt will be considered beneficial instead of being burdensome. If, on the other hand, the public debt enriches the rich at the expense of the poor, it imposes a real burden. Let us analyze carefully the nature of the transfer. In order to repay the interest and the principal of the debt, the government must levy taxes. When the taxpayers pay, the bondholders receive. The bondholders are generally rich people. But the tax burden does not exclusively fall on the rich, unless it is very sharply progressive, which is seldom the case. The tax burden falls on the rich and the poor, both, and in the case of indirect taxes, it may be more on the poor than on the rich. The net result may be that the wealth is transferred from the poor to the rich. This means a net loss of economic welfare. This burden is accentuated by the fact that the transfer is from the young to the old, or the bondholders, the creditors of the government, are generally advanced in age, and from the active to the passive members of the community. Here, says Dr. Dalton, if nowhere else in the sphere of public finance, the voice of equity rings loud and clear. There is also a general presumption on grounds of production, or besides those on grounds of distribution, against the enrichment of the passive at the expense of the active, whereby work and productive risk-taking are penalized for the benefit of accumulated wealth. Thus, internal debt has adverse repercussions both on production and distribution of wealth. This is its direct real burden. Its indirect real burden will lie in the check it imposes on production. Page number 824. The production is likely to be checked if the desire and ability to work and save are reduced. If the repayment of debt involves very heavy taxation, it is likely to reduce the ability and the willingness to work and save. Burden of external debt. The external debt also involves a series of transfers of wealth, but not within the same country like the internal debt. This makes all the difference. When the loan is raised, wealth is transferred from the lending to the borrowing country, and when it is repaid, the transfer is in the opposite direction. The account of money paid by the debtor country towards interest and the principal is the measure of the direct money burden on the community. But if we want to know the direct real burden, that is, the loss of economic welfare, we shall have to consider the proportions in which the rich and the poor contribute to these payments. The government will raise the required money by taxes. If the taxes fall largely on the rich, the direct real burden will be less than it would be if the incidence is largely on the poor. The payment that we make to the foreign creditor gives him a control over our goods and services. He does not take away our money. It is of no use to him. He buys with that money goods in our country. An external loan thus sets up a drain of goods from our country. In the absence of debt payments, these goods would have been enjoyed by ourselves. This means a diminution of economic welfare, hence a direct real burden. The indirect burden of the foreign debt lies in the check to production of wealth in the economy. Taxes imposed in order to raise funds for debt payment may reduce willingness and ability to work and to save. The debt payment made by the government may reduce public expenditure in the directions which would have stimulated production. Hence, production may be checked. International payments can be made only by exporting goods. For this purpose, a country must produce more. Hence, it is said that production is stimulated. But production is stimulated only in certain directions. There is no general increase in production and employment. Factors of production are limited. If they are needed in the export industries, they will have to be drawn from the other industries, which must consequently shrink. Thus, there is only a diversion of resources and no net increase in production and employment. Role of public borrowing in a developing economy. A developing economy has to tap all possible sources to mobilize sufficient financial resources for the implementation of its economic development plans. It has to utilize revenue surplus for the purpose, seek external aid, pitch up its level of taxation, and resort to public borrowing in addition. But taxation and public borrowing are the two major instruments of resources mobilization. Public borrowing has one advantage over taxation. Taxation beyond a certain limit tends to affect economic activity adversely owing to its disincentive level. Taxation beyond a certain limit tends to affect economic activity adversely owing to its disincentive effect. There is no such danger in public borrowing. It does not have any unfavorable repercussions on economic activity by being disincentive, partly because of its voluntary nature and partly because of expectation of return and payment. According to expert opinion, taxation should cover at least current expenditure on normal government services, and borrowing should be resorted to finance government expenditure, which results in creation of capital assets. In that case, growing public debt will not be a burden on the economy because such a debt is self-liquidating. But there is a limit to public borrowing, which is considered safe. Additional taxation is also necessary to implement the development plans. Page number 825. The classical theory frowned upon public borrowing. It was thought that the use of resources by the government was less productive than their use in private hands. But the classical reasoning was based on the assumptions of full employment, inelasticity of money supplies, and unproductiveness of public expenditure. These assumptions, we know, are not valid today. Public borrowing for financing productive investment generates additional productive capacity in the economy, which otherwise would not have been possible. It is used as an instrument to mobilize resources, which in an underdeveloped economy would otherwise have gone into hoards or invested in real estate or jewelry. Public debt would thus divert the flow of resources into the right channels. Thus, in an underdeveloped economy, public borrowing, if prudently managed and skillfully operated, can become a powerful instrument of economic development. Besides growing, public debt provides the Besides, growing public debt provides the people opportunities to hold their wealth in the form of safe and stable income-yielding assets, that is, government bonds. Growth and composition of public debt provides the monetary authorities with assets which they can manipulate to give effect to a monetary policy considered desirable in the context of economic development. Thus, monetary policy, which is considered essential for achieving the objectives of economic policy, becomes vitally related to public debt management. The management of public debt is used as a method to influence the structure of interest rates. Thus, a growing public debt in an underdeveloped economy has become a powerful tool of developmental monetary policy. There are two important ways in which the government of underdeveloped economies raise resources through public loans. 1. Market borrowing, that is, sales to the public of government bonds or long-term loans and treasury bills or short-term loans in the capital market. 2. Non-market borrowing, that is, issue to the public of debt which is not negotiable and is not bought and sold in the capital market. Example, issue of national savings certificate and national plan bonds and accepting deposits in the government post offices. Voluntary or forced loans. Most of the types of public loans are voluntary. But if the voluntary loans do not prove sufficient for the purpose, forced loans become necessary and are resorted to. An important example of forced loans familiar in India is that of compulsory deposit scheme. Compulsory borrowing is a compromise between taxation and borrowing. Like a tax, it is a compulsory contribution to the government, but like a loan, it is to be repaid with interest. Compulsory loans have a special advantage in the context of an inflationary situation and are superior to voluntary public borrowing. They sterilize funds, whereas voluntary public loans result in the creation of readily cashable bonds. They are monetized to increase liquid assets in the community, which produce an inflationary effect. Also, lower rate of interest can be paid on compulsory loans, thus reducing the most of public debt. But a continuous policy of compulsory borrowing may arouse public resentment. Normally, it is the voluntary public borrowing programs which should be chiefly relied upon. Difficulties of public borrowing in underdeveloped countries. Public borrowing, however, has to face special difficulties in underdeveloped economies. Page number 826. 1. There are no organized capital and money markets, and where they exist, they constitute a very small portion of the total capital and money markets in the country. Also, there may be no organic relationship between the organized and unorganized markets. Besides, the resources of the organized capital market are too inadequate to fulfill the capital needs of the economy. 2. Special difficulties of public borrowing in the underdeveloped countries arise from the fact that the people have a predilection in favor of investment in real estates that gives them social prestige, and for jewelry, because it can be easily concealed and can be easily converted into cash in case of need. 3. A substantial volume of savings in these countries originates in the rural sector, but these people have no tradition of investment in trade and industry. The rural saving cannot be mobilized effectively because rural incomes do not move through monetary channels. That is why most of the financial institutions are concentrated in the urban areas. Also, agricultural interests are entrenched strongly politically and resist all proposals to tax them. 4. The prevalence of very high rates of interest militates against the flow of funds towards agricultural improvement, savings accounts, government bonds, small-scale industry or other channels of investment where the yield cannot be so high. 5. The response to government securities is also poor because of rising prices which reduce the value of the yield from government securities. Conclusion. But in spite of these difficulties and limitations, public borrowing remains a powerful instrument of resource mobilization. It is not only a necessary supplement to taxation, but also a very desirable form of capital mobilization. Suggestions for the success of public borrowing. 1. In order to mobilize financial resources through public borrowing, the denomination of the loans, rates of interest, and the periods of maturities should be adjusted to suit the preferences of different kinds of investors. 2. Also, it is necessary to stabilize the prices of government bonds so that public confidence in the government bonds is retained and response to future issues is encouraging. 3. Financial institutions should be set up to attract voluntary savings. 4. The facilities for deposit of savings should be varied and widespread and easily accessible. 5. A reasonable stability in the value of money, that is, price level, must be assured. Otherwise, confidence of the savers will be shaken and saving will be discouraged. 6. Some underdeveloped countries have found the lottery system very useful because, according to this system, savings are attracted at lower rates of interest. Thus, price bonds have been issued to attract savings into the public sector. 7. A suitable monetary policy constitutes an important factor in the success of the borrowing programs of governments in underdeveloped countries. The aim of the monetary policy is to maintain sufficient liquidity in the economy as a prerequisite of the success of the borrowing program. A growth-oriented monetary policy has to be both regulatory and developmental. Effects of public debt on production, consumption, distribution and level of income and employment. In modern times, public borrowing is both extensive and intensive. Almost all countries resort to public borrowing and they get deeper and deeper into it. Financial operations which public borrowing of modern dimensions involve are bound to affect production, consumption, distribution and the level of income and employment in the country. Page number 827. Effect on production. Vast sums are raised through public loans by modern governments both in the domestic capital market and abroad. They are raised to finance productive enterprises of various kinds, example, steelworks, multi-purpose projects, construction of ships, railway lines and national highways, heavy electrical and engineering works, and so on. Obviously, such enterprises build up the economy's production base and, in course of time, make an enormous increase in the country's output. Public borrowing transforms inactive bank balances of the people into active capital. Repayment of loans also transfers money from expenditure to savings. Thus, public borrowing stimulates the process of capital formation, which increases the productive capacity of the country. Effect on consumption. When people subscribe to government loans, they generally have to curtail consumption. In this way, the propensity to consume is curbed. Since investment of funds raised by borrowing raises the level of employment and so increases public incomes, their consumption is increased. Much, however, depends on the manner in which funds raised by public borrowing are spent by the government. Effect on distribution. Public loans transfer money from the rich to the government. But the fiscal operations in modern times are meant to benefit the poor primarily. Either the incomes of the poor increase directly through increased employment, or it benefits them indirectly through the enlargement of social services. In this way, national wealth comes to be redistributed in favor of the poor. In India, the Prime Minister's 20-point program is aimed at reducing poverty. To the extent it is financed by public borrowing, public loans will have been used to change the distribution of wealth in the country. The rich will become less rich and the poor less poor. In this way, the gulf between the rich and the poor will be narrowed. Effect on the level of income and employment. In modern times, public borrowing is resorted to in order to raise funds for financing agriculture, industry, extension of the means of transport and communications, or for construction of major irrigation works. Sometimes, local development projects are launched to increase employment opportunities in rural areas. In this way, not only are the economic activities in the country multiplied, but the volume of employment is also increased and the level of income goes up. Key terms: internal and external debt, short-term and long-term debt, burden of debt. Questions. 1. Public debt has a secular tendency to go up in every country. Discuss. 2. In what cases and in what manner is it proper for a government to raise loans? 3. State the objects for which public debt may be contracted. Describe the economic effect of public debt. 4. What are the principal methods of redeeming public debt? Explain their relative merits. 5. Distinguish between the burden of internal and external public debt. How would you deal with the problem of the repayment? 6. What do you understand by the burden of public debt? Can any generation shift the burden of public debt to future generations? 7. Discuss the effects of public debt on A. money supply, B. price level, and C. rate of interest. 8. Examine the relative merits of taxation and borrowing as methods of mobilizing resources for development. 9. Discuss the comparative significance of taxation and borrowing as instruments for financing public expenditure in a developing economy. 10. Compare the effects of taxation and borrowing on production and distribution of wealth in a country.